to come in. There's a dimple in her chin. She's a young thing and cannot leave her mother. Welcome to Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
Of the Cortez Public Library. And now Ms. Barbara has about three stories for you.
The first one today is called Kermit the Hermit, written and illustrated by Bill Peet, published by Houghton Mifflin Company. And I want you to listen for the rhyming words in this one. In Monterey Bay, there was a jumble of rocks stacked up like a castle across from the dock. The king of this castle, an old crab called Kermit, lived all by himself in a cave like a hermit. There was never a crab who was one half as selfish or one tenth as mean as this crusty old shellfish. What made Kermit greedy and grumpy that way was the shortage of food everywhere in the bay. For a crab must depend on what he can find, small scraps and tidbits of any old kind. To Hermit, each day meant a fight for survival with every last seagull and crab as a rival. Unless it is cured, sometimes greediness grows where it finally stops. Alas, nobody knows. And before very long, Kermit grabbed everything from a rusty padlock to a ball of kite string, a broken jackknife, a pair of old shoes, things that a crab couldn't possibly use. And his cave was soon crammed without one inch to spare. There was just enough space left for Kermit in there. Like any old miser, he wanted a lot of something or other. He didn't care what, and he'd have been greedy the rest of his days if an odd twist of fate hadn't changed Kermit's ways. This remarkable change in old Kermit began with an everyday thing, just a battered tin can, a pork and bean can that had been tossed away far out in the sand dunes that bordered the bay. The crumpled tin lid caught the sun's bright reflection, which caused it to sparkle in every direction, and since the old miser had never been told that bright things that glitter are not always gold, he supposed that it must be some valuable thing that someone had lost, a gold watch or a ring. So he crawled off the rocks and out onto the land, then over the hilly, broad stretches of sand. And not until Kermit was next to his prize did he realize a trick had been played on his eyes. "Why, you phony tin faker, you," grumbled the old grump. "Rubble like you should be tossed in a dump." Then just as he turned to start back for the bay, the crab spied a dog who was heading his way. The dog was exploring and trying out smells, sniffing at driftwood and empty clam shells. One sniff at the can told him what had been in it, so he then turned to sniff old Kermit a minute. In one grab, the crab gave the dog a sharp nip on his sensitive nose, and he let out a yip. "That'll teach you," he snapped, "to go sniffing at me." Then he turned himself round to head back to the sea. But the dog made a leap, seized the crab in his jaws by the back of the shell, beyond reach of the claws. "Put me down," cried the crab. "Put me down, you big brute, or I'll give you another good pinch on the snoot." But the dog paid no heed to old Kermit's command. He set to work digging a hole in the sand. The crab guessed at once that it was not just a cave, it was going straight down, so it must be a grave. "What a horrible end," Kermit said with a groan, "to be buried alive like a worthless old bone." Just then, as the dog dropped the crab in the hole, a boy happened by with a long fishing pole. "You old hound," he scowled, "what a mean thing to do. Now how would you like it if I buried you? You're too nice a dog to do something like that." Then he scooped up the crab in his tattered straw hat, trotted off down the beach, to the end of the sea, and flipping his hat, he set old Kermit free. With a sigh of relief, the old crab went his way on back to his castle of rocks in the bay. But if it weren't for the boy, he just had to admit, there'd be no tomorrow. That would have been it. "I'll reward my young friend," said old Kermit. "That's what, with all my life savings, every last thing I've got." But things like old shoes or a broken jackknife could never repay him for saving my life. The ideal reward would be a new bike. There's something I'm sure that a small boy would like. Yet how can a crab ever buy a bicycle without any money, not even a nickel? He pondered the problem the whole afternoon. Then far into the night by the light of the moon, but try as he might, alas and alack, he thought of no way he could pay the boy back. The next afternoon, as he crawled on the rocks, Kermit spotted the boy on the end of the docks. The very same boy, the old crab could tell that by the faded striped shirt and the tattered straw hat. He had been lulled to sleep by the warm summer breeze, with his fishing pole propped on his patched trouser knees. "I might help him to catch a big fish," Kermit thought, "if there's any big fish around here to be caught." Of course, he must first find the boy's baited hook. So he scrambled out into the bay for a look, and just a few yards from the pilings, he found it, with a school of small minnows all swarming around it. Lightly gripping the line just below the lead weight, Kermit tiptoed along gently, dragging the bait. If he happened to give it the least little jerk, the boy would reel in, and his plan wouldn't work. So Kermit kept on till he came to a ledge, where he stopped to peer cautiously over the edge. Then, reaching as far as he could with his claws, he lowered the bait toward a halibut's jaws. The big fish took a look, and in one mighty scoop, both the worm and the hook disappeared in one gloop. When he found he'd been hooked, he took off like a streak, and the line, which was really too flimsy and weak, suddenly snapped from the force of the shock. And somewhere behind Kermit, back near the dock, he was on his way now, with no one to help, and off he went flying through tangles of kelp. Up over the waves he went floppity-flip straight out of the bay on a foamy, wild trip. Then somewhere, far out in the broad rolling sea, the furious fish finally fought his way free. Way out in deep water, the crab couldn't crawl. About all he could do was to let himself fall, and Kermit went tumbling down in slow motion into the dark, gloomy depths of the ocean, to the soft sandy floor, where he lit with a plunk near the place where an old pirate ship had been sunk. The huge hull had been smashed, all the sails ripped and tattered, and in every direction the cargo was scattered. "I imagine," said Kermit, "I'm not safe down here. There's much more to this place than the weird atmosphere." Some creature was watching. The old crab could tell by the cold, creepy feeling that ran through his shell. Crouching flat in the sand, he peered into the dark and suddenly saw it, a monstrous blue shark. As the shark wheeled around for a head-on attack, Kermit spied an old chest that was open a crack. He got there a second before the shark did, and in a wild scramble, squeezed under the lid. Pushing hard with his snout, the big fish tried his best to force up the lid of the heavy old chest. He lunged with a fury and all the brute strength of his broad fins and tail and his 20-foot length. But the lid's double hinges were solid with rust and a century's thickness of barnacle crust. So the crab stayed within, while the shark stayed without, and all he got for his pains was a badly bruised snout. And he finally turned tail, then away he went tearing, in search of a school of sardines or some herring. Not until he was sure the big shark was long gone did Kermit look down to see what he sat on. The old chest was filled pretty near to the top with a heap of gold pieces that made his eyes pop. "How strange," Kermit muttered. "No one's found it before. It can't be much more than 2 miles from shore. But anyway, all this gold treasure's mine now, if I just haul it back to my castle somehow." With a coin in each claw, he set out for the bay, with his life in great danger each step of the way. Not only the shark, but other big fish as well, could easily bite through a crab's crusty shell. To avoid being caught by these crab-hungry enemies, he scuttled behind the dense clumps of anemones. Here the deep shadows were mostly blue-green, so a bluish-green crab there could scarcely be seen. Every day, for 3 months, Kermit made the round trip, returning each time with 2 coins in his grip. To make room for the treasure, he emptied his cave of the rubble he'd gone to so much trouble to save. After stacking the gold into one gleaming pile, his crusty face cracked in a satisfied smile. He was thinking of all the great pleasure and fun such a treasure would bring to a certain someone. Then he crawled from his cave for a view of the bay in hopes that he'd find his young friend there that day. Since the dock was deserted, he looked toward the shore, where he spied some small boys, half a dozen or more, tall ones and scrawny ones, and one who was fat, but not one of them wore a striped shirt or straw hat. But his young friend might wear something else altogether, since the weather had come with its cold, foggy weather. But anyway, Kermit thought, what could I do? Just walk up and say, "Here's a present for you"? Then he heaved such a deep and most sorrowful sigh, he attracted a pelican roosting nearby. "Now cheer up, old fellow," the big bird began, smiling as only a pelican can. "If you've got a problem, please let me suggest you tell it to me. Get the thing off your chest." No one could resist such a friendly big smile, so the crab told his tale to him after a while, showed all the gold when he came to the end, then tried to describe his heroic young friend. "That boy," said the bird, "is familiar to me. Some people watch birds. I watch people, you see. The lad has 2 sisters and also 1 brother, and then I'm quite certain a father and mother. They live in a very small 3-room red shack in the south part of town, besides the train track. I could carry the treasure there inside my beak, but I'd swallow it all, for my beak has a leak. So if you would like, I'll just give you a lift. Besides, you're the one to deliver the gift." And so, with 2 gold pieces tight in his grip, Kermit took off on his first flying trip across the broad bay in one breathtaking swoop away through the dense fog as thick as pea soup. By the time Kermit got up the nerve to look down, the big bird was soaring out over the town. Below was a small cottage painted barn red beside the train track, as the pelican had said. That poor people lived there was easy to see, for it was the one house without a TV. As the pelican came to a fluttering stop alongside the chimney, he let the coins drop. They fell to the bottom. The two friends could tell, for the pot-bellied stove went kerboing like a bell. Then inside the house, great excitement broke out. "Why, it's gold! It's real gold!" they heard somebody shout. The family ran out to find what it could be, but discovered the fog had rolled in from the sea. A ghostly white curtain closed in everywhere, so they never caught sight of whoever was there. The high-flying crab in the pelican's beak brought the family a fortune inside of a week. Soon they had a TV set and all sorts of toys, such as dolls for the daughters and bikes for the boys. All the rest of the gold, which was quite an amount, they set safely aside in a savings account. For the wise father said, "It's not every day that a fortune is dropped down our chimney that way." The end.
We're going to take a station break. If you're just joining us, you're in luck. Miss Barbara has two more stories for you. We're Library on the Go on KSJD Dryland Community Radio 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And the song at the start was Billy Boy.
Our next story is called A Gold Star for Zog. And this one, too, has some rhyming words you need to listen for. This is by Julia Donaldson, illustrated by Axel Scheffler, published by Arthur A. Levine Books. Madam Dragon ran a school many moons ago. She taught young dragons all the things that dragons need to know. Zog, the biggest dragon, was the keenest one by far. He tried his hardest every day to win a golden star. All the dragons in year one were learning how to fly. "Hi," said Madam Dragon, "way up in the sky. Now that you've been shown, you can practice on your own, and you'll all be expert flyers by the time you're fully grown." Zog went off to practice, flying fast and free. He soared and swooped and looped the loop, then crashed into a tree. Just then a little girl came by. "Oh, please don't cry," she said. "Perhaps you'd like a nice sticky Band-Aid for your head." "What a good idea," said Zog. Then up and off he flew, his Band-Aid gleaming pinkly as he zigzagged through the blue. A year went by, and in year two the dragons learned to roar. "More," said Madam Dragon, "louder, I implore. Now that you've been shown, you can practice on your own, and you'll all be champion roarers by the time you're fully grown." Zog went off to practice. He roared with fearsome force. He kept it up for hours on end, but then his throat was hoarse. Just then the girl came by again and said, "What rotten luck! Perhaps you'd like a nice soothing peppermint to suck." "What a good idea," said Zog. Then up and off he flew, and breathing fumes of peppermint, he zigzagged through the blue. A year went by, and in year three the dragons learned to blow. "No," said Madam Dragon, "breathe out fire, not snow. Now that you've been shown, you can practice on your own, and you'll all be breathing bonfires by the time you're fully grown." Zog went off to practice. He blew with all his might. He twirled around in triumph, and his wingtip caught alight. Just then the girl came by again. She said, "You poor old thing, perhaps you'd like a nice stretchy bandage for your wing." "What a good idea," said Zog. Then up and off he flew, his bandage flapping wildly as he zigzagged through the blue. All the year four dragons were learning, can you guess? "Yes," said Madam Dragon, "how to capture a princess. Now that you've been shown, you can practice on your own. You'll need to capture hundreds by the time you're fully grown." Zog went off to practice. He tried and tried and tried, but he simply couldn't manage. "I'm no good at this," he cried. "I'll never win a golden star." Just then he saw the girl. "Perhaps," she said, "you'd like to capture me? I'm Princess Pearl." "What a good idea," said Zog. Then up and off they flew, the princess gripping tightly as they zigzagged through the blue. "Ah," said Madam Dragon, "our first princess so far. Congratulations, Zog, my dear. You've won a golden star." Zog was proud and happy, and Pearl felt good as well. She took the dragon's temperatures and nursed them when they fell. A year went by, and in year five the dragons learned to fight. "Right," said Madam Dragon, "here comes a real live knight." Up spoke the knight. "My name," he said, "is Gadabout the Great. I've come to rescue Princess Pearl. I hope I'm not too late." Zog breathed fire and beat his wings. "You can't! She's mine!" he roared. "Oh, no, she's not!" yelled Gadabout and waved his trusty sword. The other dragons crowded round and watched them all agog. Who was going to win the fight, Sir Gadabout or Zog? Then Princess Pearl stepped forward, crying, "Stop, you silly chumps! The world's already far too full of cuts and burns and bumps. Don't rescue me. I won't go back to being a princess and prancing around the palace in a silly, frilly dress. I want to be a doctor and travel here and there, listening to people's chests and giving them my care." "Me too," exclaimed the knight, and took his helmet off his head. "I'd rather wear a nice twisty stethoscope," he said. "Perhaps, princess, you'll train me up?" And Pearl replied, "Of course. But I don't see how the two of us could fit upon your horse." Then Zog said, "Flying doctors, I'd love to join the crew. If you let me be your ambulance, then I can carry you." "Bravo," said Madame Dragon, "an excellent career." And all the 5-year dragons gave a loud, resounding cheer. Then Madame Dragon told the horse, "I really hope you'll stay. I'll let you be my pupil's pet and feed you lots of hay." "What a good idea," said Zog. Then up and off he flew, the flying doctors waving as they zigzag through the blue. The end.
You're joining us on Library on the Go, KSJD Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM.
And our last story today is called The Good Luck Cat by Joe Harjo, illustrated by Paul Lee, published by Harcourt, Inc. I have a cat, a stripedy cat with tickling whiskers and green electric eyes. She has the softest fur in the world, and when I pet her, she purrs as if she has a drum near her heart. My Aunt Shelley from Oklahoma said some cats are good luck. You pet them, and good things happen. There aren't many in the world, maybe one in millions and billions. Woogie is a good luck cat. Aunt Shelley pet her on the way to bingo and came back with money to buy us all new shoes. I pet her when I lost my favorite beaded earrings I planned to wear to the spring powwow, and then found them under my bed. Aunt Shelley says cats have 9 lives, but Woogie's 9 lives, for all her good luck gifts, went fast. The first life went when she climbed up in Mom's car to keep warm near the motor. She nearly lost the end of her tail when Mom started the car. Her second life escaped when she followed my brother and me to school. She ran out in front of a car. I closed my eyes and screamed, but when the car passed, she was sitting across the street, licking her paws. The third life I only heard about when I got back from the grocery store. Mom told the story for weeks. She had turned the dryer on and gone upstairs. It was a good thing she had forgotten her coffee, because when she came back down, who did she see spinning and yowling in the dryer window? The fourth life I don't like to talk about. My cousin Krista's dog chased Woogie and almost ate her. She looked like a soggy wash rag, and she had to get stitches. She limped for a month. The fifth life was Woogie's own fault. She got in a fight with my cousins Megan and Ben's cat over a bird. I don't like that about cats, but Aunt Shelley says they are born to hunt. Her sixth life was lost when she fell from the top of a tree. She was, you guessed it, hunting birds. I thought cats always landed on their feet. Woogie landed on her head. My dad watched Woogie's seventh life fly by him as she ran after it. She was running from some boys who had shot her in the ear with a BB gun. The eighth life was my fault. I wanted to take her to the powwow with us. My parents said no, so did Aunt Shelley, but I hid her in the trunk behind our outfits, behind Ben's bustle, in a box I punched with breathing holes. Then I forgot about her. Mom said it was a good thing it wasn't summer. Woogie would have died. I made it up to her with licks of my snow cone. One day, Woogie didn't come home. My cousins and I looked for her for hours. We looked in the dryer, in Krista's backyard. We looked under Woogie's hunting tree and in the trunk of the car. But we found no good luck cat. Aunt Shelley drove us all around until way past dark, as far as the grocery store. We knocked on every door, but no one had seen her. For 4 days I missed my stripedy cat with the softest fur, the tickling whiskers, and the green electric eyes. I missed the tender drumming of her heart. Mom said Woogie must have used up her ninth life. Yet every morning and every night she called the animal shelter asking for our good luck cat. Aunt Shelley, who was losing badly at bingo, said she wouldn't give up yet. All I could think of was the BB gun boys, my cousin's dogs, all the motors in the world, and the highway near the grocery store. On the fourth night, I put a dish of meatloaf, Woogie's catnip mouse, and her ball with the elastic string by the door. I sang her favorite song, and I asked her to come home. That night I dreamed about her. Woogie the good luck cat ran toward me, and she was smiling. The next morning, we found Woogie curled up by her empty dish and her catnip mouse. Her left ear was bitten in half, but she was purring and singing as if she had never left. This is definitely a real good luck cat, Aunt Shelley said as we let our Woogie in. She has more than nine lives. Woogie smiled. So did I. I know Aunt Shelley's right. The end.
Cats are funny that way, aren't they?
Oh,
how they
yes.
kind of tend to survive a lot of things that they probably shouldn't. Thank goodness. I had a cat when I was a kid that disappeared down into the canyon around our house, and we didn't see her for weeks, and then she just showed up one day like nothing had happened. So you never know what they're up to.
We moved with a cat from Mississippi to Texas, and about a week or so afterwards, one of the cats disappeared. And 4 months later, she showed up on the windowsill meowing to get in.
And sometimes they will follow you across the country, especially dogs. Please join us every Thursday at 10:30 in the morning at the library for our regular story time. Saturday mornings at the farmer's market during the season. And also here on KSJD, 3:30 in the afternoon on Sundays. And we are in the middle of our summer reading program. Please drop by the library for a reading log. And we are going to be having the Geek Squad. And that will be this coming Wednesday at 2 o'clock. And let's see, Miss Barbara, what will that be? That'll be the 25th. The 25th at 2 o'clock. There's no charge to you. And the Geek Squad is from the Durango Discovery Museum. And that show should be a lot of fun. And now we're going to go to Billy Boy. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.